This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Thursday, October 18, 2012. High winds fed wildfires burning in southwest Colorado yesterday afternoon, pushing a blaze burning in La Plata County since last Friday toward a subdivision and prompting an evacuation. The Durango Herald reports the Vallecito Fire, which is burning in heavy dead fuels and dormant gamble oak and aspen in the Jack Creek drainage west of Vallecito Reservoir, grew dramatically to 200 to 250 acres by 6 p.m. yesterday. The U.S. Forest Service said several homes in the Lake Vista Estates subdivision were directly threatened earlier Wednesday afternoon. 18 homes and several outbuildings in Lake Vista Estates were put on pre-evacuation notice. Northwest winds were pushing the fire downslope toward the subdivision. Air tankers and bulldozers had been planned for yesterday's fire suppression efforts, but winds prevented their use. Instead, water tankers and ground crews shifted their focus to create fire breaks to protect the nearby structures. Meanwhile, north of Durango and also within the burn area of the 2002 Missionary Ridge Fire, the Crazy Creek Fire is estimated at 3 to 4 acres, burning in heavy dead and down aspen and mixed conifer high up the Missionary Ridge Road. The source of the fire is under investigation. 5 San Juan hotshots with a U.S. Forest Service engine are constructing indirect line around the fire to contain a burnout operation planned for later today to mitigate firefighter risk from standing snags. The final projected fire size after the burnout will be 10 to 12 acres. I have to add, if all things go as planned. The Little East Fire was reported about 4 p.m. yesterday near the La Plata-Montezuma County line, about 6 miles southeast of Mancos, near the area of this year's 10,000-acre Weber Fire. It had burned about 100 acres by evening. The U.S. Forest Service ordered the evacuation of 30 to 40 homes in the area. Another small fire, reportedly less than an acre, was reported in the South Hope Creek drainage 10 miles northwest of Hermosa late yesterday afternoon. It is in the San Juan National Forest, and no further information was available this morning. Arapaho Basin opened yesterday, heralding the start of Colorado ski season. The Denver Post reports that the resort opened with an 18-inch base, one intermediate trail, and one lift operating. A basin is usually one of the first in the country to open for the season. The Post reports that Loveland Ski Area has said it also plans to open in October, but has not set a specific date yet. The San Miguel County Planning Commission has approved a special permit application from Mercury Towers to build a 150-foot cell tower in Norwood. The Norwood Post reports that the decision surprised representatives from Mercury Towers and a large crowd of community members. The Post reports that the commission gave approval, but only on condition that Mercury Towers first submit a second application for an alternate cell tower site at a site to be determined near the gravel pit northeast of Norwood. But if the commission deems that second application unsuitable, the tower on the Ralph Weaver property in Norwood would be allowed to proceed. The Post reports that the motion was brought forward as a hopeful compromise between all parties, with a location that might lessen the scenic impact while maintaining appropriate improvements in cellular coverage for Wright's Mesa. The Post reports that despite a heated public comment period, there was little argument that Norwood needed improved cell phone service. Some feared that the tower in its current proposed location would mar the idyllic quality of Wright's Mesa, while others worried that putting too many constraints on the project or denying it altogether would cause Mercury Tower partner AT&T to simply walk away from the area. The Post reports that the applicants can appeal the decision to the San Miguel County Board of Commissioners. The San Miguel Power Association will pass a nearly 5% rate increase from their major power provider down to local customers starting next year. The Telluride Daily Planet reports that the increased rate from Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association goes into effect January 1st and equally affects the other 43 electrical cooperatives that purchase its power, including Delta Montrose Electric Association. Tri-State spokesman Jim Van Summeren told the Planet that their board approved the 4.9% rate increase in September because of purchased power, long and short-term contracts, and transmission operation maintenance costs. Tri-State increased its rates by nearly the same amount just last year. In an online announcement, San Miguel Power Association's general manager, Kevin Ritter, told customers that it's unknown how the increase will affect individual bills, but it could be similar to last year's increase. Ritter added that the co-op now has to work to see where they can absorb the increase, where they can cut costs, and where they must pass on costs. The Planet reports that San Miguel Power Association is allowed to buy up to 5% of its power from local sources. The co-op is currently working on a solar farm project in the Paradox Valley, as well as some other local renewable energy projects. In the 2 years that it's been open, Delta County's homeless shelter, the Abraham Connection, has seen local use increase dramatically. The shelter provides emergency overnight winter housing to homeless families, women and men, in Delta County from November 1st through April 30th. The increased need is driving the shelter board and volunteers to purchase their own building in hopes of expanding the services they offer the community. KVNS Arianna Brocious spoke with Board President Cheryl Olchenbruns and Vice President Cami Collins to get the latest on the shelter's work.
So we spoke a couple years ago when the Abraham Connection was sort of getting off the ground. And for those who may have not heard that, I was wondering if you could briefly explain how you got started and why.
The Abraham Connection is Delta County's homeless shelter. And we started 2 years ago when we recognized Cami, myself, and somebody from Adult Protection started talking about the need in Delta County and the numbers of homeless and hungry that we were seeing in our caseloads. And we got together with a group of community people, pastors, people from human service agencies and ourselves, and we started talking about the issues of homelessness and what could we do to help alleviate some of the suffering in Delta County. And we started our first season mid-January. We opened up with 4 guests our first night, and in that season we provided 77 bed nights of shelter.
We always laugh because in our trainings we say our first season we did 77 bed nights and we were really, really proud of ourselves. Our second season, we started November 1st and we jumped a huge increase. We tripled the number of unique guests that we serve and then just exponentially did more bed nights.
So what do you attribute that increase to? Is it the economy or is it just increasing awareness of the shelter's existence? Or
I think it's a combination of both. We learned the second season that we had people who were hungry but had places to live. And so we started providing guests could come just for the meal if they had a place to live. And so our numbers of meals increased also. And I think that that just kind of spread the word about who we are and what we're doing. And then certainly the community became more aware of our presence and started referring more of their clients to us.
And so for the past 2 years, you've been at the Delta County United Methodist Church, but now you are raising the funds to get your own building. Is that right?
It is. You know, the shelter space that we have at the church is very limited, and we aren't able to accept over 16 guests. And so we're realizing the way we jumped from season one to season two, we're very sure that season three, we're going to need bigger space.
And along with space, because we borrow the church space, we have some pretty limited hours of operation. We're open from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And there's a lot of concern from our volunteers who have to wake families and kids up at 6 a.m. and say, you have to leave the shelter. You know, it's cold in December and the schools don't open until 7:30. And where are those kids going for an hour and a half? And so if we had our own building, we could certainly be open longer hours.
Are you seeing the same people over and over, or do you see a lot of new people coming through?
We did not have any repeat guests from season two. So the people who we helped in season one got back on their feet. A few of them moved. So we haven't seen repeat from seasons. Now, so we're open 180 days. People can seek our service as often as they need to in that 180 days. We don't have any restrictions on that. So we had some people that stayed with us. I think our longest guest was there for maybe 2 months. Some people were there just 3 or 4 nights and then they moved on. So we tell people, you know, we're here as often as you need us. And so what we found is some of those people that needed, like we've had some guests who were working and just had to go through a couple pay periods so that they could save money to get into an apartment. So they use our service as often as they need to get back on their feet.
And the other thing that we're providing, in addition to the shelter and the meal, is that we are helping people that need assistance with completing applications for food stamps or housing or job applications. So we're working very hard to get people back on their feet so that they don't need to utilize our services.
And it sounds like that's been successful. You've seen people really be able to take advantage of the services and then continue moving on.
We have. Last year, for example, we had an older gentleman that had lost his family and stayed with us about a month, I think, and we were able to direct him to senior housing, and he was able to get into his own apartment.
So I think in our second season, we were actually able to get, I think, 4 people into housing.
Where does the money come from, or where do you find the funds and the food to provide to people?
So October 1st, we launched this building campaign because we recognize we have to get into our own building. And the building campaign is actually the first time that we've ever actually gone out and said, I need money from you guys. You know, we've had some fundraisers, but we have been very, very blessed. We live in a very, very generous community. And that money has come in. The food has come in. The coats have come in. The volunteers have come in. We've never actually had to ask for anything.
And so what is your goal ultimately for the capital campaign?
We have a goal of about $280,000. We've applied for grants for about $167,000, somewhere in there. So we're trying to raise the rest.
And do you anticipate as the economy improves that there will be less of a need for the Abraham Connection?
I believe that there's always going to be a homeless population anywhere, and that's because of a variety of factors, not just financial concerns, but mental illness and drug and alcohol abuse.
Our goal from the beginning has been that the Abraham Connection would kind of be the centralized location for anybody needing assistance to come. We see our organization growing much more towards a day treatment center, and with our own building, we can very much make strides to filling that gap in this county.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. You're welcome.
For more information on the Shelter's Capital Campaign, you can call 773-8290 or find the Abraham Connection on Facebook. The KVNF Sports Report will air on Friday this week, so tune in tomorrow morning to hear the latest on local sports. This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.